Total Choice Radio.
You are listening to Wild Time, the Animal Rights World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on tcrfm.co.uk and of course on wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. Now this gets a little weird, but the first thing that comes to my mind when I listen or when I hear or when I, you know, be reminded of New York is a very old Grandmaster Flash song from the early 80s. And I think it was something like, don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Long, long time ago. Anyway, and the second thing that comes to my mind is the movie The Day After Tomorrow, which I think is one of a really, really great movie, not just because it was directed by a German, no, just because it's a great movie, and obviously climate change would be something we would talk about. But I'm joined by an Englishman, actually, Alan Howard, who is organizing the Save Japan's Dolphins Day, or one of the organizers there, in New York. So, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
Good. Couldn't help myself. It's one of the things that came to my mind. I read New York. It started rattling in my head, that old song, you know, by Grandmaster Flash.
I remember that song as well. Yeah, very much. You used to dance to that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. It was a long time ago. At that time, when that song came out, I think that must have been the time when Depeche Mode started out. So yeah. I remember really distinctively that I listened to, I think it was See You or something, or maybe You Just Can't Get Enough, one of those two tracks, and then sort of went into the neuromantic and, you know, sort of electro thing.
I remember what you mean, like Human League and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
It's brilliant, you know. I mean, it's brilliant. I used to be, obviously, you know, when I was very young, I wanted to be in Yazoo.
Same with me. We're probably about the same age, Thomas, although I think I probably look older than you do.
I don't know about that. I'm born in 67, actually.
You're only a couple of years older than me, then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, age is really irrelevant, isn't it, these days?
That's what I try and say.
So, yeah. So what brought you to the States?
Let's see, about 13 years ago, met an American lady on the computer, actually.
Oh, okay.
And to put a very long story short, she liked me so much that she decided to bring me over.
All right.
So,
and the rest
used to live in Florida, and then we moved up to New York State. Mm-hmm. I don't actually live in New York City, but I live in New York State. We've lived here for 7 years now.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I left Germany 12 years ago. I used to live in Ireland for 10 years. And now
Been around. Yeah. I used to live in Germany also. I used to live in Dortmund, and I used to also live in Gütersloh.
Oh, in Gütersloh, in Dortmund, yeah, right.
Uh-huh. I can't remember it all.
it's quite industrial there. I mean, you know, every time you think of Dortmund and stuff, you kind of think of industry, you know, industrial city. But I'm from a city called Offenbach, which is next to Frankfurt.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know? And then 12 years ago, you know, I was self-employed as a musician for a couple of years in Germany. And, you know, but I've been a salesman by trade. And then they said to me in the late 90s, why don't you try your luck abroad? You know?
Yeah.
So I did that.
Not the only one. I figured that that's what I'd do as well. 12 years ago, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I go back to Germany probably, I don't know, every 2 years or something. And my theory is that the people, you know, on the airport and stuff, they have been trained to be unkind. Because I have this passport of mine, you know, and I got it from the embassy in Dublin, and I wore a yellow shirt. And the Irish would say, like, Jesus, need sunglasses for that, or something funny, you know? And so when I go back to Germany and I show the passport, I would say things like, yeah, well, you know, the yellow shirt wasn't the best idea. And they would just say, wait behind the yellow line.
Yeah, there you go.
You kind of go like, wow, come on, guys, you know, lighten up, you know.
I loved it in Germany. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was only... I was 18 when I first went there. You know, for a young guy, it was the first time I'd been out of the country, basically. And it was just beautiful. And I actually wanted to move back there after I left Germany. Mm. And other things happened in life. And I ended up over here instead, you know.
But I always have to say, like, you know, I mean, being in Birmingham now for 2 years and, you know, having lived in Ireland and before that in Germany for 33 years, I think really, you know, all countries, it's nice to live somewhere else for a while, you know, and just, you know, because you get to know a culture much better, you know, and you know, I like it, sort of, you know, being also, you know, being that free that I can just go anywhere, really. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and it also gives you an understanding and appreciation of other cultures.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and you know that you realise that, yeah, we might have different cultures and we might all talk a bit different, but at the end of the day, we're all still people and we all want the same things.
Absolutely. And people just, by and large, they just want to get by.
That's right. They want to get by and, you know, you shouldn't treat anybody differently because of the way they talk or because of what country they come from or what religion they are. You know, we're all people. We're on this one planet here, this one spaceship going through space.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got to learn to get along.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, I believe it has gotten better, at least what I sort of, over the last 10 years, I think sort of racism, at least towards me, has gotten much better, you know. I mean, there were times where people were sort of, you know, asking me where I'm from, and then they would give me the Hitler speech, you know.
But that's not and, better. You know, it's ignorant. You know, they shouldn't do that to you. Online today, I saw something online today, following the massacre of those poor people at that temple in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they found out that the rise of the hate groups in the US is increasing year by year by year, and it's all because of intolerance. You know, just because somebody's wearing a turban on their head, you know, what gives anybody the right to go and kill somebody or to even hate them?
And you know, when we talk about animals here today, I always find, like, you know, as long as we haven't solved racism, we will never solve speciesism, you know?
No, we've got to deal with ourselves first.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, there's little battles that can be won for the animals, just like with people. But, you know, I believe that it can be done, you know, one time.
Yeah, same here. I mean, you know? And also I don't believe necessarily that sort of people come first. I think, you know, if there is issues and we have the energy to you know, talk about them and attack them and solve them, then it can be done, you know, or ought to be there. At least, you know, we should all try, you know.
I think if we all work together, we can achieve absolutely anything.
Absolutely.
Anything at all.
How did you get into organizing this event?
Well, I got involved with the dolphin issue regarding Taiji a couple of years ago. I watched The Cove, the documentary, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with.
Yes.
If anybody isn't familiar with it, I encourage you to watch it.
Yes,
it'll change your life. It really will. So I went on Facebook, I went online looking for more information about what I could do for these dolphins. And eventually, last year, I came to a Facebook group called Save Misty the Dolphin. And I really liked the way they approached it. It wasn't just people talking about it and, oh my God, what are we going to do? And racism, stuff like that. There was no racism, there was no hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And they were taking action. They were encouraging people to call Taiji on the phone, call the embassies on the phone, email these places and say to them, you know, we don't agree with what's going on and we'd like it to stop. So I was part of the group for probably a couple of months, and then eventually I was invited onto the administration team. And right now I'm one of 8 people who runs the administration team. And a couple of months ago, Sandy McElhaney, who you spoke with earlier, she said, hey, we're going to be having events all over the world. And I'm like, okay. And
meant it.
yeah. And she's like, can you help in New York City? And I'm like, okay, I can help. I don't know if I'll be able to go. Mm-hmm. And to cut a very long story short, I'm going to be flying halfway across New York State to get to New York City on Japan Dolphins Day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do the event and I'm going to fly back, and I'm back at work the morning after.
Wow, yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't want anything else. I've never done anything like this before with an event. We've got some great people helping us with it. I've got Lisa Dash and Heather Hansen, who's actually in New York City helping. And we've got some great people coming. We've got some really good ideas for the day.
Mm-hmm. So what have you planned for the event as such? And will it be on the 31st or on the 1st?
Ours is on the 31st, on the Friday.
Okay, right.
We're going to assemble at 11 o'clock outside the Japanese consulate in New York City. It's going to last until approximately 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to be doing, we're going to present in a positive message. I've made it very clear, you know, Save Japan Dolphins, Rick O'Barry, and Save Misty the Dolphin itself have all said, we don't believe in a boycott of Japan. We do not believe in any form of hatred toward Japan. And racism, definitely not. We're not having any of this. No shame, none of that rubbish. So what we're going to do, we're going to assemble. We're going to have signs, banners, posters. We've got flyers to hand out. business cards, postcards. We're going to have at least one iPad on scene on the day, and I'm going to wear it on my chest. And I'm going to be playing a public service announcement called My Friend. If anybody's not familiar with it, it's a two-minute PSA with various celebrities in it, like Ben Stiller, Jennifer Aniston, telling people about what's happening in Japan with the dolphins. So we're going to be playing that. We're going to be portraying a positive message. The aim is to increase awareness on the street with people walking by. And just today, actually, I sent a letter to the consulate asking if we can meet them or meet a representative from the consulate during the event. And we've also sent a letter to the Japan Society of New York asking them if they'd like to come and talk with us during the event, because it's all about building bridges.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the solution to all this ultimately comes from within Japan itself. It's okay building awareness within this country and the UK, Germany, every other country, but most of the people in Japan don't know that this is going on.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, the good thing really is over the sort of the last couple of months, I see increasingly, I see pictures from people, from Japanese people in Japan, where they have little stalls and posters up. You know, because obviously it's not really encouraged for them to sort of show off.
It starts
to happening over there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a saying over in Japan, the nail that sticks up must be pounded down. You know, you've got to conform with the society, and anybody who sticks out, society itself will pound that person down until they get back in line.
Yeah.
But things are changing over in Japan with the new generation. I've been talking with people in Japan who, after the tsunami and the nuclear disaster, you know, they're saying that they don't want nuclear power in their country anymore.
Yeah.
And instead of just sitting and talking about it, they're actually taking to the streets, which is unheard of.
And I have we have talked to people, just, you know, for you listeners out there, if you go to wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, that's www.wildtimeonline.blogspot.com, and you type in tsunami or Japan, you will actually find two interviews that we've done with people who tell us about, firstly, how was life after the earthquake, then how they are rescuing animals in the exclusion zone. And then we also had an interview with a lady in Niigata who has a big shelter of 400 animals, and 200 are from the exclusion zone in Japan. So there's loads going on there that probably doesn't get highlighted half as much as it should. So I want to encourage you to go there and just type in Japan and see what the people there have to say for themselves, since we're touching on this today. So, yeah, so I always had a sort of affinity for the Japanese anyway. Don't quite know where it comes from, but I remember when I lived in Ireland, we used to watch NHK World, Your Eyes on Asia, and they had these series out and about where they basically had foreigners traveling through Japan. And then, you know, they would usually be bilingual and tell people what you see there, you know. It was quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just enrolled in Japanese one, so in probably 4 or 5 years, you might be able to say something, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're just people like us, Tomas, you know. The thing that's happening with the dolphins and also the whales as well.
Yeah.
It's a small minority of people. It's, you know, it's in Taiji itself, it's 26 fishermen. It's the people who are catching the dolphins, killing them. It's not a lot of people that are involved in this.
Yeah.
You know, therefore, you know, if anybody comes to me and starts talking about the Japanese in a negative manner about this issue, I'm sorry, I try and educate them, but if they're not going to listen, I have no time.
Absolutely.
For anything like that.
And you know, I mean,
no,
it also is interesting to see that obviously it's a political game. There's money to be made. That's why the governments are not stepping in, or the government is stepping in. So there's loads of things. And it's always, I think, sort of, you know, an easy way to just say, oh, they're all like this, and, you know. But you know, it's the same thing when we talk about, we just did an interview with Jim Robertson a couple of weeks ago about hunting in the States, you know, and he says that only 4% of the people in the States are hunters. And then people still generalize, oh, the Americans, you know, and there are loads of nice people in the States. So, I, half of my family actually lives there.
I mean, I've been here for 12 years. I've actually got 91 acres of land in the country. And when I first moved here, I would have people try and come and hunt on my land. And all that time, you know, I'd go and talk with them and I'd say, I'm sorry, but this is my land. I do not agree with hunting. on yeah. Ireland. Most of the people were fine. Just people, once again, you always get some fool who wants to cause trouble. But now they respect, you know, the hunters respect that I don't want them up here.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't come. And it's all about talking with them instead of arguing with people.
Yeah.
You know what, this is my point of view, you've got yours, and I don't want you doing this.
Mm.
And they agreed.
Absolutely.
You know, so
I mean, when it comes to Tai Chi, I mean, the other argument oftentimes that in the beginning anyway, in the sort of came from Japan, and even the argument that I heard when we went to the embassy in London, I think, you know, almost 2 years ago now, did a protest there, and we recorded it for radio, where they basically were saying, you know, the Japanese gentleman there from the embassy was saying, oh, you don't understand us, you know, it's a different culture. So they were trying to say, you know, cultural background and all that kind of stuff. And people were saying, look, you know, you didn't even eat meat before the Americans introduced it, really.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
But they're using it against people because obviously some people do back off. I mean, I don't know if you have heard this sometimes when you say something, you know, you think, you know, what is it to you? You're not even American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's true. Every country's got its problems. I was talking about this with somebody today. And, you know, something that people say, well, why are you focusing on Tai Chi? You know, why are you picking on the people of Tai Chi and stuff like that? Well, when it comes to people like myself, I mean, I'm vegan. You know,
yeah,
I don't eat animals.
Yeah.
I don't eat any animal products. Yeah. And I don't judge people either. If they want to eat meat, fair enough. I prefer it if people don't. But, you know, we're not just focusing on Tai Chi when it comes to people like myself. It's also issues in our hometowns. It's issues in other countries, places in other parts of America. The point is, if there's animals being killed or cruelly treated or taken into captivity, it's something we don't like. And it doesn't matter what country you're in, and it doesn't matter who you are. If you're doing it, you know, you're going to have people who don't agree with it, and we're going to do something about it, and we're going
Absolutely.
To stand up. We're
yeah.
going to stand up against you, or we'll try and stand with you and work something out with you.
Yeah.
Just one thing I want to raise real quick about why people in Japan don't know about this issue. I was talking with a Japanese friend a couple of weeks ago, and he said that he had watched The Cove. You know, and I mean, he opposes the hunt. So what I tried doing, I sent him a link that he could give to his friends, where he could download the documentary online,
mm-hmm.
and he could share it with his friends. So I send him the link, and he comes back, and he said that there was a message saying that this movie could not be downloaded within Japan. So you're talking control of information. I mean, you know, everything that I've learned, the media and the government of in Japan are controlled. The government controls the media. Therefore, your regular people, your citizens, the information that they're getting about issues is very tightly controlled.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a very tight lid on this issue about the dolphins, not just in Tai Chi, but all over Japan.
Yeah. And well. I remember there were videos, or there are videos on YouTube actually, where people go to Tokyo, for instance, you know, those are the bigger cities, mm-hmm. and
yeah.
show them what's happening in Tai Chi, and people just can't believe it.
Can't believe it.
Yeah.
They can't believe it. You know, and I mean, this issue, it's not just about a few dolphins being killed or a few dolphins being thrown in tanks and transported to China and Dubai, the
yeah.
United Arab Emirates, all over the world, that kind of thing. It's not just about killing. It's not just about captivity. It's a human health issue as well. The mercury that these dolphins are contaminated with, you know, it's very dangerous for people.
Yes, it is.
You know, and they're keeping a lid on that as well. So that issue, you know, it's a human health issue that needs to come out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just saying it when I talked to Sandy, that obviously, you know, on the Cove video, when you look at the sort of, you know, additional footage, the special feature stuff, there's a really sort of longer segment on mercury and, you know.
Yeah, it's called
how
Mercury
much
Rising. Yeah.
It's really important when you watch the Cove. Don't just watch the movie, though, you know, I mean, that's impressive enough, but, you know, always have a look at also at the special feature, since you have, you know, when you get a hold of the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
That's well worth watching, because, you know, that's a real eye-opener. They probably had to take it out because of time, you know. But that really drove it home to me as well. And I think a good argument is when you have people that say to you, like, you know, why don't you care about people? Because that's sometimes what I get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had a social justice show before I had an animal rights show. And, you know,
yeah.
we did features on Afghanistan and 9/11 and whatever you know, took our fancy, but it was all human rights related. We did things about the Falun Gong organ harvesting in China, whatever. And when I started to, you know, when I sort of changed to animals, I'm still fighting for the same thing. You know, it's the right to live and not being, you know, hunted or whatever have you. But people say to me, like, you know, why don't you care for people? And in the case of the cove, it is a you know, if I dare say that, it's a minor blessing that there is a health implication for people, because then you can use that argument easier and say, like, you know, if you don't care about the animals, that's one thing, but you do and ought to care for your fellow men.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And you know, what you'll find, a lot of us who work within the animal rights movement, or, you know, activists, period, you know, we in our regular lives, we deal with people as a job. I mean, for example, me, I work in a juvenile detention center. You know, that's what I do for a job.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't like people and if I didn't want to help kids, a lot of it is therapeutic. You know, they come in, they get arrested or whatever, and they come in and we hold them until they decide where they're going. If they're going to go to a placement or if they're going to go back home or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not locked up in a cell. It's just like being in a house, and we interact with them, we talk with them, we play games with them. So you know what, if you don't care about people as well, you can't do that kind of job.
Yeah, and also it's important to remember, since animals really have no legal status as of yet, we do need people to help us make those changes.
Yeah, the animals can't make the laws, the animals can't change the laws, it's got to be up to us.
Yeah.
You know,
so from all the things that are happening in your neck of the woods, you know, or let's say, you know, with regards to the dolphins and, you know, be it Tai Chi or others, what do you think is the hardest thing to battle?
Where do you want me to start? It's all a battle. I mean, you know, the hardest thing for me personally is apathy.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing how apathetic some people are when you raise this issue to them. I mean, not just about dolphins, but, we'll talk about the dolphins, you know. Yeah, they love the animals, or it's a shame they're being killed, but, you know, they don't really want to get involved.
Yeah.
And we all have our own choices to make in this life. But what I say, you know, I decided this when I was a pretty young kid. You know, I didn't want to just go through my life and not do anything. I wanted to do some good in the world. For my fellow man and for my fellow creature as well. And yeah, I didn't turn vegan until I was 30.
Oh, I turned vegan 5 years ago when I was 40.
Yeah,
so
there you go. You know, I used to love animals, but I used to eat them as well.
Yeah, same here.
You know, that's why I'm one of those. And hopefully, there's a lot of vegans like us. You know, we don't judge anybody for what they're eating.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why I don't do this show just online, because, you know, one of the reasons why we also do this on a radio station, is because there you have people who are maybe not vegans, are not necessarily even into animal rights as such, and they listen to this. And I've been told that, which is, you know, I'm quite proud of that, that people actually approach us and saying, like, you know, the way it was presented, I never even knew this is going on. What can I do?
Yeah.
So from that point of view, it would be stupid to walk around and point fingers, because, you know, what good does that do?
Exactly. You can't point fingers, because then you get fingers pointed at you.
Yeah.
And then you've got to try and explain.
Yeah.
So no, if we can all work together, you know, I don't care where people come from or anything like that. If there's a common issue that we all agree on, let's come together and let's fix it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's wrong. There's something wrong. Let's fix it. And you know what? We're going to fix it.
Yeah. I absolutely believe that this is one of the things that, you know, people will look back at this and say, like, you know, what? I didn't know it took them so long to solve this.
Yeah.
You know, at least that's what I hope. I mean, you know, we can't even imagine, really, when you watch this, I don't know, Who Do You Think You Are stories, for instance, you know, and they go back hundreds of years, and then they even are shocked that their own relatives were slaves somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
but if you look at the way some people used to be treated, and unfortunately they still do, but, you know, it's slavery of humans, and you know, then slavery was finished, but those people, they still didn't have full rights as citizens. It was disgusting the way people were treated.
Yeah.
And once again, it took concerned people coming together and saying, this is not right, and we're going to change things.
Yeah.
And way back then, everybody's laughing at them. You're not going to change anything.
Yes.
You're not going to change anything. This is the way it's always been, and it's always going to stay this way.
Yeah, and also
things change.
It is a strong reminder that also, historically speaking, change always comes from the fellow men.
Yes.
You know, it's people on the ground that say, you know, yes. Here, let's just, you know, group together and rattle some cages, you know?
Yeah, and it always comes from the bottom.
Yes, absolutely. You
know? I mean, I class myself at the bottom because I'm a working class guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm anything special like just everybody else in this. But, you know, issues like this, you can't rely on the governments to just come out with, oh, well, this is wrong and we're going to change the law.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's going to take people like us on the street coming together and demanding that things change.
And it's also interesting to notice that, you know, when we talk about sort of, you know, coming from the ground, you know, we do interviews here with people from New Zealand. It doesn't really matter what country. It becomes really quite easily seeable that, you know, everywhere there is an industry, most governments seem to have taken a side already.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not the side of the people who want them to go free. You know?
No, the lines between corporations and governments are they're very blurred. You can't tell the difference anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the amount of money that our representatives over in the United States are paid by corporations. It's unbelievable. They're not working for the people anymore.
Yeah.
They're working for special interests and corporations. And that's something that, again, we've all got to come together and change. We either sit back and we let it happen, and then slowly our rights are taken away from us.
Yeah.
Or we can come together and say, no, you're not going to do this. If you do try doing it, you're going to be out of a job because we're going to get somebody else up there instead.
And also, you know, I mean, there are also times where this really works, you know, where people say, you know, this isn't on, and then plans that would be against the people, for want of a better word, were dropped, you know. So it's not that people on the ground are powerless. You know, but it obviously, you know, you need a lot of people sometimes, especially for something that happens in another country.
Well, you do need a lot of people to get anything done, but it always starts with one.
Absolutely.
And everybody's going to laugh. If anybody who knows me that's listening to this when you play it, they're going to laugh now when I say this. One of my favorite words is power. Everybody's like, what do you mean power? What's power all about? And the power isn't about believing in something up in the sky or heaven or God or anything like that. It's the power that you've got inside yourself. You know, if you don't think something's right, you've got the power to do something about that yourself.
Yeah.
It only takes one person.
Exactly.
And then sooner or later, somebody's going to come along and say, hey, you know what? I agree with you.
And it's quite a gift, you know, in that sense, if you feel it, you know. I mean, a lot of people don't even feel it. I mean, just like you were saying, you know, with the apathy. Sometimes, you know, I say something that I think makes perfect sense. And people look at me like, you know, what are you on?
I'll be honest with you, Thomas. I think a lot of people are quite happy just staying asleep and not looking around at what's going on with them. The problem is, you know, if that kind of thing continues, this world is not just going to be just bad for whatever animals are left or whatever environment we've got. It's going to be terrible for the people that have got to live in that world.
Yeah.
People like me and you may have gone by that time. But it's going to be children. Everybody's children. What kind of a world are they going to be inheriting?
Absolutely.
No dolphins, no whales. The oceans are dead.
Yeah.
There's no forest left.
Yeah.
Come on. Is that the kind of world?
I was just saying it the other day. You know, we did interviews, for instance, on plastic and, you know, what it does to our oceans.
Yeah.
And automatically, because it's, you know, even though it's sort of, it's, you know, the way we did it was quite, you know, I thought was quite entertaining. But, you know, topic-wise, you know, we have this little counter on our online version. You know, not very many people listened to the shows that I did or that we did on eco cars or plastic. You know, it's just not something people want to necessarily be. Be confronted with. And I find, you know, it's quite interesting.
I think it's because we use plastic so much in our everyday life. I mean, right now I'm holding a plastic phone.
Yeah.
I'm holding a plastic pen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, but
it's also not about not using it. It's about using it properly.
Properly, and disposing of it properly as well. Because you look at the photographs of whales and dolphins and sea turtles
and
every other animal in the sea I can think of.
How many animals die from it? You know.
Yeah, they're full of plastic. They've opened turtles up full of plastic.
But that's the other thing that this gentleman said that I talked to. This isn't really about not using it. But since people do not even listen,
yeah,
naturally they
nothing assume, can be done.
You know, they sometimes assume that they're just saying something against us.
Yeah, you know, well, it's got to be presented correctly.
Yeah,
and you know, people have. I think deep down inside of us, all of us care about it. It's just got to be awakened. But yeah. A lot of people, they've got that switch turned off, and they're quite happy just carrying on watching TV. Playing Xbox, going to work and coming home and going to bed and not worrying about anything else.
And then dropping dead and haven't lived.
Yeah, you've not lived.
Yeah.
I don't like quoting people, but somebody said you've got to stand up for something, otherwise you're not living.
That's true.
I'm saying the quote wrong.
I absolutely believe this. I was saying it the other day that obviously life could be much easier. I mean, there was a time, you know, where I probably just, you know, going to work and that was about it, you know.
Yeah.
But looking back at it, you know, I like my life much better now.
I do as well, because I've met some really great people since I got involved in all this. It's going to change something sooner or later.
Yeah, and you're in the process of doing it. I mean, I'm sure this will be a really successful thing in New York.
I hope so. You know? I really do. Yeah. I'm not saying we're going to have thousands of people there.
It doesn't really matter. As long as you have the people that are committed, you know. It might not be a thousand this year, you know, but since every person counts, you know.
So as long as people come in, they've got the will, the enthusiasm, absolutely. And they've got the power, that's all we need.
Absolutely. Because I think, you know, this can be solved.
It will.
Before I let you go, I'm going to play you out, you guys there, with, you know, some British electronic music. So if I give you a choice between three bands, you just say which one you want. So it's either the Human League, Depeche Mode, or Erasure.
Erasure. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to play an Erasure song now. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks a lot, Thomas.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
The baby.
Welcome back. You are listening to Wild Time, the Animal Rights/World Conservation Show with myself, Thomas Janak, here on TCRFM and obviously globally on tcrfm.co.uk and of course on wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. Now, this is interview number 5. You know, I can't count, but I reckon that's interview number 5 with regards to the feature that we're doing here on the Save Japan Dolphins Day. It's brilliant. We heard there are 82 cities around the world. I would have loved to talk to 82 people, but we're already over an hour. And, you know, if I go to the internet and see, oh, there's something that is over 60 minutes, I might not click on it. So when you listen to this, thank you for clicking on it nonetheless. And if you listen to this on the radio, by the time you listen to it, the 31st of August may well have passed. But the information is still valid that we're talking about. Because even if some miracle would happen and the dolphins of Taiji would be safe, there are others that just aren't. So I'm joined here by Lucy Byrne. We've spoken before. She's from Earth Race. You probably remember, if you actually type in her name, Lucy Byrne, you will actually be able to listen to the interview that we've done a couple of months ago. And she's also from Earth Race. So we've talked to Scott Bowman and Pete Bethune and obviously Lucy from Earth Race. And I just want to say this before we even do this. There were people saying to me, like, isn't that odd that you do features or footage on Sea Shepherd and Earth Race? And I said, yeah, I'm a radio show. I don't have to take sides. What's going on here? You know, years ago I actually talked to Greenpeace when Tony Blair was still on. We're a radio show, we're trying to raise awareness, we're not having to take sides. I just want to say this because some people are quite sort of, you know, hitting me over the head for it. Lucy, very welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Before we talk about your involvement in this year's event at, you know, the Japan's Safe Japan's Dolphins thing, there are two things that we do. Later on, we'll have a real nice world premiere, but I'm not going to talk about it now. We'll do this later. But also, you were mentioning Whale Fest that is coming up, that you're involved in. And I, for one, have never heard of it. What exactly is it and where and when is it happening?
Okay, well, Whale Fest, the first one was actually last year. And it happens in Brighton. And this will be the second one this year, which is going to be even bigger. I think last year they had something like 2,500 people attend over the course of a weekend. Mm-hmm. This year they're hoping for a lot more. It's going to be huge. And it's basically the biggest festival of people getting together just about whales, really, and dolphins, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of things going on there. We've got tour operators, talks by loads of experts, celebrities, and then all your conservation groups and so on there as well. Giant inflatable life-size whales, you name it, it's... Mm-hmm. It's there, and it's just really exciting, really.
And will it be in Brighton again?
It's in Brighton. It's in the Brighton Metropole this year.
Okay, yeah. And then do you have a date for us?
It's the Saturday 27th and Sunday the 28th of October. The tickets are from about £9. But if you Google Whale Fest, look up Whale Fest, all of the information is on the website. There's absolutely oodles to look through. Definitely worth going along to. Really, well,
it definitely sounds like it. And is Earth Race just having a stall, or are you involved further with this?
We're doing a few other secretive bits to help out, which I'm not going to divulge too much on at the moment. But we will.
You know, the word secretive says it all. I'm not going to press you on it.
We will have a stand there, and Pete's booked to be there as well, so that could be really good.
So obviously, if you know, want to listen to the interview that we've done with Pete, you just type in his name, Pete Bethune, on Wild Time Online, and you get there. I mean, you know, we're uploading the interviews so you can re-listen to them or share them. So just to plug that one, it's all good. I recently spoke to Scott about the 55 Mauis. So I know that obviously depending on where you are, you have different jobs to do in a way. So Earth Race London, what are you guys up to?
At the moment, we're doing a lot of research into upcoming campaigns, which we've got coming up at the end of the year. And we're helping out with Save Japan Dolphins Day. We've got the stuff happening with Whale Fest, and we've also got an anti-captivity campaign that's going on through the summer, mm-hmm. which is targeting anybody that's going away on holiday that might possibly want to swim with dolphins or go to a dolphin show. There are posters on the earthraceconservation.org website, which you can download and use, with the tagline, imagine if you could only swim in the bath this summer. So that all kind of links into the anti-captivity thing that we have, which is ongoing, which is obviously in the UK, we don't have captive dolphins.
Thank God for small mercies.
Yeah, absolutely. But obviously there are a lot of people from the UK that go abroad each year and go and see dolphin shows. So it's kind of targeting those people that perhaps don't think about the captive experience.
Yeah. I mean, we covered this a lot. And I remember, you know, I have relatives in the States. And, you know, I visited them years ago, 2008 or something. And when I said to them, like, you know, that they're captive, they just looked at me like, you know, what are you on about? Because I think they paid something about up to $500, I think, for having someone swim with them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how relatives are. They can probably blow this out of proportion. So maybe it was less. You know, but they looked at me as if they're saying, like, you know, what planet are you from?
Yeah. People don't think past what they see when they're there, and they don't think about what happens once they leave, and they don't think that once they're gone, those animals are still there doing the same thing day in, day out.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of mindset, especially the holiday vibe when you're on holiday and everything's good and everything's bright and summery and you can't see the bad side to it.
Yeah. I have to say that, you know, sometimes we're very nice on the show and sometimes we're not. and it's really just, you know, going there these days in the 21st century. I don't think anyone has never heard of the fact that this is just imprisonment and that they usually have a wider territory.
That's it. And it, like you say, people don't want to believe it or don't want to think that it's a bad thing, or they don't want to feel that they're paying into something which is causing suffering or anything. You know, it's unfortunate that a lot of people are kind of very blinkered to it.
Yeah. Are you a big fan? I just talked to a lady here, which will be on the same feature, Nicola Sherlock from Devon, actually, but she lives in Ireland. And they have this one wild dolphin called Fungi. I've been there 10 years ago when I studied digital media there. I've been there on a boat, but I didn't jump in there, you know. But they're not waiting for him, or you know, they're just people jump into the water, and if he's there, that's fine. If not, then, you know, tough luck. Yeah. So is that something you would as Earth Race would support, saying, you know, if you want to swim with them, as long as they're wild, that's okay? Or would you say, which is usually my take, leave them alone?
I think leave them alone as much as possible. But if you happen to be swimming in the ocean and a dolphin comes and takes interest in you, and it's something that they've decided, then, you know, if it's on their terms and they can swim away at any time, it's a completely different thing, isn't it?
And it must be nice to experience this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever heard of a book called Dolphin Way by a gentleman called Mark Caney.
And, no, I haven't.
He's a marine biologist. He works for PADI, the diving instructor school. Mm-hmm. And he had an experience with a dolphin in a cove, and it was just him and this dolphin. And it sparked in him something that caused him to write this book called Dolphin Way, which I think everybody should read. It's an absolutely brilliant read. And it was just that one-on-one interaction with him and the dolphin, and on the dolphin's terms, that really kind of inspired him to then go and write a book about it.
That's nice. I mean, you know, that's what people often get when they really interact with let's say a specific animal or a specific type. Or, you know, you hear that over the years, because, like, that was what did it for me.
Yeah.
You know. And I was talking to a lot of people lately, and they're all basically, you know, when it comes to statistics, they're all saying, really, ecotourism, let's just say, you know, go and have a, you know, watch them, you know, with binoculars and stuff, brings much more money these days. Or probably not as much, you know, but nearly as much money as captivity programs will. And if not, then at least that's the way to go.
Definitely, definitely. And that's the more inspiring route as well, especially for youngsters. I mean, you can't compare the two experiences, really. Seeing an animal jump in the air to music and loud, you know, shouting and stuff, and being out in the ocean and seeing them in their natural environment, it's just so different.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't put a price on that, really.
And the other thing, really, is like, you know, even if it is a real blast to see an animal move in unison to the music, it's still not natural. You know, I was saying it the other day, you know, and people say like, oh, you know, someone said to me years ago that lions used to love it being in a circus. And like, in the wild, I would not see one lion that would look for a burning wheel and jump through it. It's just insane, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. And they use the ongoing thing of, oh, it's stimulation for them, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And you think, well, yeah, but they shouldn't be there in the first place.
And so they stimulate themselves very well without us guys in the wild.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just one of those things, you know, when you watch these wildlife documentaries, and you you understand it. And years ago, I went to South Africa, I wanted to see if being a ranger would be a job for me. Right. So I went down there. Turned out it didn't, because you have to control numbers and shoot animals. So I was out. Yeah, but I didn't know that then. I just didn't cross my mind. I was like, go there. But yeah. There were all these wild animals, obviously. And just seeing them in their natural habitat was amazing. I was just saying it to another lady here that obviously I took so many pictures and all I have is rhino asses because they're just too quick, you know. Yeah. But nonetheless, that was a much better experience seeing their backside running away or just walking than ever seeing them in any zoo. And it doesn't matter to me how big the zoo is.
Yeah. Yeah.
People used to compare it because I used to live in Dublin, and the Dublin Zoo obviously, you know, is nicer than the London Zoo. You know, they have more space there. But that doesn't mean let's all go to Dublin Zoo.
No.
You know, it's just one of those things, you know. So with Earth Race, the good thing is that you guys are busy. The bad thing is that you guys are busy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just doesn't seem to end. And even let's just say, you know, worst case scenario in New Zealand, the Maori dolphins go extinct. Then there will be other things that need to be done down there.
The Maori's dolphins, that's just a giant lesson for everybody to learn, and it's something that everybody should be taking note of, because that situation is diabolical, and in this day and age, we really shouldn't be letting species get to that kind of desperate state before things start to happen for them. And at the moment, it's you know, it doesn't look good for them.
Exactly, because that's the other thing, you know, if they start to happen.
Yeah, that's it. And which is ridiculous in itself, because you think, you know, you could go to a government and say, hey, look, this is what's happening, and that they would, you know, burst into action and do something about it. But unfortunately, it's not the way things work, which is a real shame.
Absolutely. I mean, my theory, and that's probably the truth, is as long as there's some money to be made, most governments already have chosen a side.
Yeah.
That must be the only logical consequence. That must be the, you know, what other reason can there be?
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, they can't see how they're going to make money from these dolphins, so they don't want to put money into saving them, I suppose. It's an appalling state of affairs, and it's just such a shame that there's going to be generations that grow up not being able to see certain species because we've trashed things so badly.
But luckily, I mean, there are people like yourselves, there are organizations like Earth Race, there are a lot of other people from other organizations around the world. So people, I at least, you know, probably it's probably not the most objective view that I have, because I'm doing this show, obviously, you know. Therefore, I get in touch with a lot of people, and therefore think that probably there are millions of people that want to do something. But I do still have the feeling that over the last 5 years, I've seen an increase of people taking sort of notice and say like, well, maybe that's not just. Or do you see it differently? Is your experience different?
I think slowly people are catching on, but it does take a lot of explaining to some people, you know.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, and it does take a few goes at telling people what's going on before they really catch on to, oh, hang on a second, this is actually pretty bad. And then getting galvanizing any kind of movement is again another problem too. But it is happening, but it's very slow at the moment.
Yeah, and it's very repetitious. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? I mean, you could probably hold up banners every day and give the same talk every day, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, there are there are so many issues and there are so many facets of it, and it is very repetitive, but. Definitely, I see that things are beginning to change, albeit slowly, but they are.
Yeah. And the other good thing is, you know, which brings me to the little treat that we have for our listeners, is that obviously with people like yourselves being in this, your children will never see it the way the majority of people at this point in time see it, you know, because they grow up with compassionate parents.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just, you know, that's just interesting to also see because, you know, we're talking about the treat in a minute, you guys. You know, so that's my other hope that people, you know, who are probably not as old as I am or older, you know, sort of these lonely figures that you see in the corner with little banners, you know.
Yeah.
this is more young people saying, look, you know, we're not doing it. And I've seen very young children at protest. I mean, they can't read yet, so they don't know what it says on the banner. You know, but they have a blast when people honk their horns and at them and stuff.
Yeah, but it's actually amazing some of the things that kids come out of. One of the first things that I did when I started getting involved with all of the conservation side of things, one of the first things I did was actually go to my daughter's preschool, and I spoke to the kids there who were all like 3 or 4 years old. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, you know, go into any gory details about anything. But I was just talking to them about dolphins and whales and where they live and how big they are and all that kind of thing. And but some of the questions that they come out with are just fascinating. You know, my daughter said to me one day when she saw me looking at some videos and stuff of captive dolphins, and she said to me, "Why are they in a swimming pool?" And I said, "Because some people put them there." And she said,
"Yeah, absolutely.
Why?"
Because people can handle, you know, kids can handle the truth. And it's much better than lying to her.
Yeah.
You know, which is, again, what we are basically, you know, oftentimes grow up with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the answer that I heard when I was younger, even though, you know, obviously I liked the zoo a lot for a while, where they would basically all say, including the teachers, where else would you see them?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't know that it's Africa and you can go there.
Yeah, but then I think, you know, with technology the way it is now, you can find out so much and see so much online. It's not even like you have to go to a library and get a book out or wait for this specific documentary on TV to come. It's, everything is there for you at your fingertips to find out whatever you want about whatever you want. And I think we should really encourage children, if they really are taking interest in something, that they research it and they look into it. And if they want to go and see it, then it's a goal for them. You know, it's something for them to work towards, to go out there and explore the world thoroughly,
not just,
you know, in our towns and you know, in a swimming pool with dolphins, you know.
And I think once you start loving something, let's just say a whale or a dolphin or whatever it may be, and then you will understand what is just and what isn't, and you will say something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the hardest part, isn't it? I mean, seeing it is one thing. Understanding it, easy enough. But saying something that obviously is not rocket science and does not make sense, and there's nothing to do with being good stewards of the earth or of the dolphins and whales, and people looking at you like saying, like, Jesus, don't you have anything else to do?
Yeah. I know. I think a lot of my friends think I've gone a bit mad, but they're very supportive.
Good, yeah, so am I, you know. I just wonder why I don't get any phone calls any longer. You know, I have friends in Ireland, you know, where I used to live, and they say, like, "Oh, Tom, you're looking good." That's what the Irish always say, you know, when you're heavy, they say you're well-built, so that's all good. You know, but they say, like, "Oh, you have gone mad over the animals, haven't you?" You know? But they don't go into the topic as such. I mean, they acknowledge it, you know, because they come to my page and it looks like David Attenborough's Saturday paper or something, you know.
But then also, for every person that kind of skims over it, I find that there's someone that's really genuinely interested as well. So,
absolutely, you're right. I just recently posted something about the pigs. Not gory images, just how intelligent they are, and, you know, and that they learn their names and, you know, respond to them and all that kind of stuff. And loads of people shared that and commented on it.
Yeah, I think a lot of what we do is about finding those things that people can hold on to and take an interest in and take with them and then pass on to somebody else.
I mean, when people say to you, for instance, you know, I would reckon that probably it happens that people say, like, well, Elsevier seems to be really, really specific about the oceans. Don't you care about other animals? Do you get that asked?
Yeah, we do. But I think, you know, there are so many groups out there doing so many things. It's quite important that you have a focus. And the oceans happen to be Earth Race's focus. Yeah.
And absolutely. I mean, what I do here on this show every week or every time I'm on, we're doing basically single issue campaigns.
Yeah.
You know, because if I try to talk to people, let's say in an hour or two that we're usually on air, about five different topics.
Yeah.
People are like, what? I mean, oh, you know, it's a bit typical for us to get sidetracked anyway. So we talked about, you know, yeah, I just talked to a gentleman who organizes the New York Dolphins Day, and he's British. So, and he happened to leave England 12 years ago when I left Germany. So, of course, we talked about racism and, you know, and what happened to us and stuff. But I think that probably makes it, you know, the better. So, radio-wise, you know?
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Save Japan Dolphins Day has really kind of taken off, I think. With I think it's 82 cities taking
82
part.
82 cities,
yeah.
I mean, I've been told it was 31 last year. And I thought that's mammoth.
Yeah.
But 82 is like, wow.
Yeah, that's huge. Hopefully it's big enough for Japan to take notice.
Yeah.
That people are really getting on board with this, and it's about time to make some kind of change in the way they're doing things.
I mean, my worry is that, you know, there might be one in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, people say, like, oh, this time they wake up. I you know, I sort of usually reserve judgment.
Yeah. I think everybody hoped that last year.
Yeah, true.
Because it was so big last year.
But, I mean, we know apparently that the number's getting less. And we know that, you know, I talked to someone about Save Misty the dolphin. And because of pressure, Misty has been moved, you know.
Yeah.
But she has been moved to a bigger pool.
Yeah.
Which is not, it's a small victory, but it's by no measure. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. The numbers are definitely lowering. I think it was 848 dolphins were driven into the cove last year. But not all of those were killed, obviously. Some of them were taken into captivity.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost wonder which one is the tougher fate, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, and just, you know, because we're re-airing this in autumn. So when you listen to this, you know, when by the day we speak here is basically mid-August. And just recently, they killed 150 animals or dolphins on the Faroe Islands in one day.
Yeah.
You know, so it is happening.
Today as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I reckon they did the same thing today, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a number on this? Do you know what their quota is?
I believe it ended up being 192 or 196 yesterday.
Wow.
Today it was something like, I'm not even sure, actually.
It
was less than 100 today. I think it was less than 100 today.
Right. Even so it sounds like, oh, that's not too bad, less than 100, you know?
But
when you compare
it's still horrific.
It's 100 beings.
Yeah.
They're just gone.
Yep.
You know, it's unbelievable. I mean, that's what we're trying to drive home to people, how insane the topics are that we have to cover.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I love my show, you know, I would love to go back to do sort of something on Kraftwerk or something. You know.
Well, the problem is that you can't go back there, isn't it? Once you know.
I think it wouldn't sit well with anyone, you know.
No.
Same thing with you. If you would just say, like, well, you know, I have enough of Earth Race, you would probably go somewhere else doing something else.
Yeah, no, I just couldn't stop now.
Yeah, and that's good, because really, you know, I mean, you know, we all get, you know, sort of laughed at times, and I know that activists amongst themselves, we only have each other, so there's these group hugs. It's a bit like in the 60s, you know, I was only a child in the 60s, but, you know, people say, oh, yeah, you all have free sex. No, it's just like group hugs, because you it's very good positive energy when you're at a protest. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of people you meet that campaign about something that is really gory, and have this companionship. It's indescribable sometimes. You have to come along, you know?
that's very, very true, actually. It is a really good feeling at protests or celebrations or, you know, whatever events they are, because everybody's feeling the same way about it. It's not a negative thing at all, like you say. It's a very positive thing. And if, I think everybody gets times when they feel very tired by it, You know, they feel a bit like, oh God, is this ever going to end? Mm-hmm. But like you say, you there's like a network, isn't there? And everybody Absolutely. Picks each other up and it all comes good.
And I also think it's probably good that you're in an organization. I mean, you know, because I do radio, I really couldn't join any organization because it looks like favoritism, you know?
So, yeah.
I mean, I just can't do this. You know, there are people that I would completely support and would go there. There are many of them that I completely love to interview, you know? But I think once I would be one part of them, you know, it's difficult. For people,
yeah.
You know, because then all of a sudden you're part of something. So at this point in time, I'm quite happy to just sit back. Also, I don't have to pay membership. But just, you know, jokes aside, I mean, it's just one of those things that I sort of decided consciously, you know, let's not get into something. Because I remember years ago I had Animal Equality on the show, one of the first shows that I did in England. Mm-hmm. And, you know, immediately I saw that that's one of the organizations that I would join.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since they're completely abolitionists when it comes to, you know, factory farming or whatever have you. But in another lifetime, probably, you know.
I think that's another thing that kind of speaks volumes about Save Japan Dolphins Day is that lots of organisations have come together for this, which unfortunately is quite rare. I wish it wasn't. I wish that everybody could work together more.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, you've got Save Misty, Save Japan Dolphins, obviously Earth Race are involved. There's just loads of organisations and individuals have just come together for this, which, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it, actually. I think it's going to be a really good...
Yeah,
really good
I mean, yeah, even if people cannot go there, as I said it to other people here in the feature, that the very fact that people do come together energetically is just something very positive.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always believed in energy and how this, you know, how you create something, you know. Same thing when you go for a protest. You know, this protest usually becomes a happening.
Yeah.
So let's just introduce the treat that we have.
Mm-hmm.
That's a world first, I hear. So thanks for allowing us to be the very first to air this. So tell us what's coming up now.
This is a song put together by my brother, actually. Which features my daughter singing in it. It's a special anti-captivity song.
And she's only 4 years old, right?
She's 4 years old, and she came up with the song herself.
Ah, nice.
So I hope you will enjoy it.
Yeah.
This
the song is called... The band has a name, you know.
This is We Am Legend.
We Am Legend, yeah.
Featuring 4-year-old Leela B.
Perfect. And here it is.
This is my dolphin song. I like dolphins swimming in
The point of this thing is
community radio for Tamworth.
What's that?
This is 106.8 GCR FM.